Hello, and welcome back to Women's Wellness Radio, and welcome to our new listeners. We're happy you checked us out, and you've got a great show in store for you today. We're talking to Dr. Saman Razai, and we're talking about the adrenals and stress and how you can support your adrenal glands. So pretty popular topic in this day and age, and some people are starting to learn more about it. So if you know a bit, this is a great chance to get a deep dive. And if you've never really heard of this concept, a great time to get started because it's pretty much an issue that's affecting everyone in modern America. So you are in the right place. If you're new to this show, it's a bit of a variety show on topics of women's health. So we interview people who are nutritionists or functional medicine experts. We have a naturopathic physician today. Sometimes we have chefs and different authors in the health field. So try to keep it interesting, and especially we focus on reproductive years of women's life. So we talk a little bit about fertility or even, you know, teenage health all the way to perimenopause. So we're glad you're here. So Dr. Saman, welcome.
Hi, Bridget. Good to be with you.
Yeah, nice to have you. So I was reading your bio. You're a smarty pants. You've got a master in molecular biology. That sounds pretty impressive. University of Texas at San Antonio. Are you native Texan?
Yes, I was born and raised in Texas.
Okay. And I read that you, as when you were at the University of Texas, you were also an assistant to some of the Division I athletic teams, helping them with strength and conditioning. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. I actually got to work with Coach Michael Cox, who was the head strength and conditioning coach there. And he let me run some of the programs and obviously was training me at the same time. And then I actually got to work as a grad assistant with the men's and women's tennis teams.
Cool. So it sounds like you've got some interest in sports or sports medicine. Tell me how you got into that.
You know, just growing up myself playing sports, I grew up playing soccer, kind of following the footsteps of my dad, who actually played some professional soccer, and then transitioned into playing tennis kind of through middle school and high school. And then also played like on the state level and some on the lower national level as a junior. And just realizing, I think, the impact of, you know, playing sports is one thing, but if your body's not suited to handle the demands of everything you're doing, then it's hard to keep up. And so just figuring out ways to hack into the body to make it work better so that you could perform better.
Yeah, I'm always curious about that, you know, with professional athletes, you know, what are they eating? How are they training? I've never really, you know, been in that world as far as a practitioner, but whenever I see an article or meet someone who does work with professional athletes, I'm always really, really curious because, you know, we come from that health background and just like you, I think, wow, how can we make athletes perform even better? It's so interesting.
Yeah. Optimizing the body is definitely an interesting thing, but I think if you can figure out how to do that with athletes, you know, there's definitely cross to just the layperson. People who are just doing everyday things, then you can figure out how to optimize their body for them as well.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the adrenals today. And, you know, there is a tie-in with training, like overtraining in the adrenals or how much exercise you are able to do, depending on how much adrenal fatigue you have. So, or, you know, how you recover. So maybe we can tie that back in later on. I wonder if you can give us a little info on the adrenal glands, what they are, where they are, how they work.
Sure. So the adrenal glands are, you have two of them normally, and they sit right above your kidneys in the body. And so they're part of your endocrine system and actually play an important role of releasing several hormones kind of throughout the body. So the major one that we'll probably be talking through today is cortisol. So cortisol has major impacts just all across the body, from influencing blood sugars, metabolic processes, and then there's other hormones from the adrenal glands, such as DHEA. We could talk about aldosterone, which is a mineral corticoid, so that affects kind of like potassium and sodium. And then even, you know, for testosterone are made, you know, for women, part of their hormones, you know, sex hormones will come from their adrenal glands, not just the ovaries. So The adrenals are a big player in your endocrine system, and they're kind of almost a trifecta with your thyroid gland and your gonads, depending on your men or women, would be testes or ovaries. So,
okay. Yeah, so I think we hear about them more in our culture, as I introduced earlier, because of stress. You know, we think, oh, we're this high stress culture. How does that play in? How does that affect our adrenal glands?
Right. So the adrenal glands actually kick in, you know, when you need that stress response. You know, some of the other hormones I forgot to mention would be like adrenaline and noradrenaline, which also get released from there. So sometimes when you're under states of stress or you're going into sympathetic states, you know, the adrenaline gets kicked in, but so does the cortisol. And if you're taxing that, it's organic tissue, right? So everything's designed to have a certain amount of playability. And if you start to overplay it, then you start to burn it out.
Okay. Yeah, tell us about that process. You know, there's some of these, maybe people have heard, there's these different stages of adrenal fatigue. You know, tell us how it all starts.
Right. So everybody has, you know, just to walk through the normal state of what the adrenals do, you know, while we're asleep, our cortisol tends to be really low, and this allows our body to kind of shut down and rebuild. And then some point around 3 or 4 a.m. while we're asleep, the adrenals kind of kick in and start to produce cortisol. Now, that production will peak at some point in the morning around 7 to 8 a.m. And this is kind of like what gets us up, gets us going. And then as that day goes on, we'll see kind of that those levels kind of drop, slowly go down throughout the day. So then again, at nighttime, they're bottoming out so that our bodies can then shut down and go to bed. And so there's that whole diurnal pattern with daylight where we're seeing, you know, peak cortisol happening in the morning, especially with sunlight as it's coming up. And then as the day goes on, it starts to slowly diminish so that we're able to shut down at night and, you know, get that sleep and rest. And so what happens is when that regular rhythm or cycle gets disrupted, this is where people start going into stages of adrenal fatigue.
Okay. So you mentioned that, you know, when the adrenals kick in, and I bet already people, some people listening saying, well, I don't start to wake up, feel like I'm awake at 7 or 8 a.m. And, you know, maybe I've barely gone to sleep by 3 a.m. So tell us a little bit about how sleep quality and sleep timing plays in here.
Definitely. You know, one of the big things I actually talk about trying to restore normal cortisol rhythms is actually those sleep patterns. So what you may see sometimes is people actually get a boost of cortisol later on in the evening, where they'll see that they're getting tired, maybe like 7, 8, kind of going into 9. And then all of a sudden they kind of wake up and they're kind of wired and up for several hours. And this could go through like midnight, 1, 2. And what ends up happening is their rhythm of the cortisol from the adrenal glands has been disrupted, where it's gotten into a pattern where it actually elevates. And then this disrupts their sleep cycle. Now,
yeah, how would that elevation happen?
You know, different things can happen. You know, one of the abusers of things that could happen, you know, caffeine it's not good or bad. It's just kind of the way that we use it, you know. So I wouldn't tell anybody that caffeine is something they have to completely eliminate, but the times of when we use it can be very critical. So usually, you know, people who have their coffee, I tell them, you know, caffeine's great, have it in the morning, but there's a cutoff time by about 10 or 11, really, that we kind of want to stop having major caffeine intake happening, because this can cause you to kind of toss and turn and disrupt your cortisol rhythm later on in the day.
Okay. Interesting. Now,
other things that could happen is alcohol is another thing that can kind of set things off. Again, none of these things are good or bad. It's just kind of the way we're using it. So one of the big things is sometimes having a drink of alcohol at dinner can be fine, but having that nightcap of alcohol can actually cause a disruption of your blood sugar. It actually will set you on a blood sugar roller coaster. And so then that affects the adrenal glands, because cortisol is influenced by blood sugars. And okay. So then that can also disrupt your sleep, where some people say, hey, you know, I have a glass of wine before I go to bed, it helps me fall asleep. That's true. But then about 3 hours into their sleep, they kind of find out that they wake up.
Okay. Yeah. And how about like gut bugs? I've been doing some learning that can upset your sleep cycle.
Definitely. You want to talk about, so the whole bacteria biome in our gut is becoming a bigger and bigger, bigger area of just discussion and understanding. And so, that falls into kind of quote unquote like a physical stress, in the sense of if the bacteria in our guts do a lot of things for us. I mean, they're helping us digest our foods, they're interacting with our immune system that's interlaced in our digestive tracts. They're creating an environment in the gut for like good bacteria to be there, keep the yeast at bay. That's part of our normal flora. And when those are actually off, you're actually causing more inflammation in the body. And then this also causes disruption with the adrenal glands.
Okay. Then we mentioned earlier about sports, and I'm remembering a time where I was recovering from, I had Epstein-Barr virus and some adrenal fatigue. But I was, you know, getting better, and, you know, a friend of mine was joined a CrossFit gym. And so I was like, okay, let me give it a try, which, you know, as you probably know, is a pretty tough workout. And I couldn't sleep from, you know, if I'd work out, I couldn't sleep well that night. You want to talk about why that might happen?
Sure. I mean, there could definitely be a couple reasons. So one, so normally when we do exercise, if we're in a healthy state, that's what you will call quote unquote a eustress, which is actually normal healthy stress. And so exercise actually should be a good thing for you, where it creates a little bit of stress on the body, and then the body counteracts by then coming in and rebuilding the skeletal muscle that we damaged, so that we're actually having positive effects from it. Okay. Now, when people start going into different stages of adrenal dysfunction, so thriving, what we would say, would be normal. And then your stage one is kind of stressed. Stage two is wired and tired. Stage three is crashed. Now, there may be certain times where your adrenal is actually more peaked in your body, and these would actually be better times to actually get workouts in. And there's other times where your cortisol is much lower than it should be. And if you do a workout during that time, and if it's too intense, then you actually stretch your body out further than it can handle, and it causes you to go continued into like a state of moving towards crashed.
Okay. So you're saying that the four stages are thriving, which is sort of normal, healthy, adapting to stress. Then stage one is stressed, and is that high cortisol?
Yes, that's where you'll see elevated cortisol kind of happening across the board.
Okay. And then wired tired, so this kind of is that sometimes high cortisol, sometimes low?
Yeah, so the normal rhythm that we talked about earlier, where you have high in the morning and then it drops and is lowest at night, you'll see that sometimes that curve is flipped, or you have different times throughout the day where cortisol is higher than it should be and also lower in other places. And so you're above and below your normal cortisol curve being wired and tired.
Okay. And then crash, just low levels mostly all the time?
Yeah, pretty much across the board, we're falling below the normal cortisol curve. And so you're just not making enough cortisol. Could be throughout the whole day, could be at certain times throughout the day.
Okay, so we're going to talk about diseases and solutions coming up. But if people are listening and they're wondering, well, you know, maybe I think I might be wired, tired, or whatever, what's the best way that they can know or find out more?
You know, one of the best things possible that we use a lot, like at the clinic, is a salivary cortisol test. And what you can actually do is the hormone of cortisol is actually filtered through into our saliva. And so what you want to do is actually do four catches of your saliva throughout a day. And then you can actually find out where cortisol levels are. And then it gets mapped on a graph, and you can actually see where you fall in comparison to like a normal cortisol curve.
Okay. Yeah, I do that with some of my clients too. And I feel like, you know, it's pretty affordable. It's pretty valuable. One of the first questions I get is, can't I do this through my doctor's office? You are a doctor, but I'm not. So can you talk a bit about, you know, why this test is still not super common in the mainstream doctor's office?
You know, part of the reason in mainstream doctors is that they actually don't see adrenal fatigue as a real diagnosis.
Because
just to clarify, that adrenal fatigue is more of a dysfunction of the adrenal glands. It's not a disease state, like you were just mentioning. And so disease states really fall into either Addison's disease or Cushing's disease.
Okay, so that makes a lot of sense. So the doctor, from my understanding, they need to order labs based on a suspected diagnosis. And then if the labs came in, they would diagnose you and give you some treatment. So since this is more of a general dysfunction that goes on to affect other systems, that's maybe why they're not looking to find it or treat it. Would that make sense?
Yes. No, that is totally correct. Because you can look at cortisol in the blood too. And so one of the things that they will do is look in, and if your ranges of cortisol kind of fall into what quote unquote is the normal range, then it's not necessarily considered a disease state. Unless it's high out of that range, then they're considering Cushing's. And if it's low out of the range, then they're considering Addison's. But if you're just kind of, you know, not in an optimal range of your cortisol levels, then that's kind of more of a dysfunction. And that's not something that necessarily, you know, your general GP, MD, DO, whoever you're kind of going to see usually is treating.
Okay, this makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned some of the hormones that the adrenals make, DHEA, testosterone, aldosterone. So if some of these, you know, the adrenals are off, you're in a state of, you know, one of these stages, what are some signs or symptoms that you might be experiencing? I'm sure it may or may not be the adrenals, right? They could come from different reasons, but what are some typical things you see?
Right, definitely. So when you're in more of a stressed like state, when you're having more cortisol kind of happening, you know, people will tend to have, you know, cortisol influences blood sugar. So this is an important thing to understand. When your cortisol is much higher, then you also could be causing problems with the blood sugar, where people are having those either going through their blood sugar a little bit faster, so they get hypoglycemic events. And so these could feel like anxiety. I mean, they're getting heart palpitations, different things like that. Having trouble sleeping, so the insomnia, definitely weight gain, some mood changes from the cortisol influencing some of the neurotransmitters differently that way. But there's a myriad of symptoms, and so it's definitely hard to pinpoint, and sometimes the lab testing helps out to us distinguish specifically this is the adrenals that is not functioning appropriately.
Right. Okay. And so wired tired, you talked about the rhythm being off. Perhaps there's some like crashing or late night energy. What are some other symptoms in this stage?
So those people also kind of have, you know, as it says, wired and tired, they have this unfathomable kind of like buzz going on, but at the same time, they're very tired just because their body is not working the way it is. And so since that cortisol rhythm is off, you definitely see them. And this is people who have a crash maybe in the afternoon. They're more irritable than they normally are. And that becomes like some of the mood changes that you would see. People are a little shorter. They have an outburst because they can't handle the stress load appropriately because their adrenals can't respond normally.
That's a good. So poor stress handling. That makes sense. Okay. Yeah. And you can literally be tired and wired at the same time. I bet some people have experienced that. And then crash.
Now these people will be your person that struggles to get out of bed in the morning. I mean, no energy kind of throughout the day. They've lost motivation. They're unable to accomplish things that, you know, should be just everyday normal activities. They just kind of struggle kind of throughout the whole day. Now nowadays with people with such demand on them, I mean, I have people coming in who are CEOs of companies, they're high execs in companies. I mean, they're running their own businesses and they'll come and crashed and they're like, well, yeah, I'm tired, but I have to get up so that I can either make a living, provide for the family, keep the company running. So,
Okay. So they still may be functioning, so to speak.
You could call it functioning, but it's probably not optimal functioning.
Okay. I'm just curious, you know, you probably run a lot of these tests. Is it all over the place or is there a stage you see more often?
You know, again, it could just maybe be my attraction of clientele, but I tend to get more people who are crashed.
Okay.
That tends to be the clientele that I get the most of. But, you know, definitely some wired and tired and stressed as well. But if I had to really classify most of them, most people I get are kind of in a crash state.
Yeah, you know, for better or worse, I think we're going to talk later about where your clinic is and how people can work with you. I mean, sometimes by the time people really invest in seeing a really talented practitioner, they may have let it go a while, right?
Yes, definitely. I mean, just with the, like we talked about, the demands of everyday life. I mean, there hasn't been time for them to really stop and care. They might have gone to see, you know, a general practitioner and they've run all their labs and everything seems fine. So they're kind of like, you know, nothing's really wrong. And it's not until we run more of these quote unquote kind of specialty tests to figure out or functional tests, as some of them might be called as well, that that's where the problem lies. And that's actually what we need to fix.
Okay. So before we get into some disease states in the adrenals, can you talk about these different stages and how it may affect our reproductive happiness and cycling and fertility?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so like we talked about, the adrenals is definitely part of that endocrine system. And so, they kind of have a triad working with your thyroid and your gonads. So, in a hormones case for women of the ovaries, so the ovaries and the adrenals in women produce both some of their DHEA, their testosterones. And so that can become a big problem when your adrenals all of a sudden become taxed and they're dysfunctioning, they're not able to produce their load of, let's say they're producing 50% of those hormones, then the body's affected because a lot of that hormone is not being made anymore. So now it stresses out the ovaries because they need to work harder. The thyroid may be trying to jump in to help compensate this lack of pull from the adrenal glands and then the stress of the ovaries. And so you can start seeing dysfunction of women's cycle. Women may be, my cycle had always been normal, and all of a sudden I'm either seeing different lengths of time for my cycle, their menses may be changing in the length or the heaviness of like bleeding, different things like that, because their hormone levels are now starting to be affected across the board, not just the adrenal glands.
I think it's good you mentioned that, yeah, the triad, because I think there can be an oversimplification of treatment, like just treating the ovaries. Whereas, some of these patterns are starting to happen, probably multiple organs have been affected by now. And there's lots of areas of the body that need support, right?
Yeah, definitely. Just to touch on that, there's never one system that's working on its own. There's no vacuum for our body to kind of be like, oh, it's just your adrenal glands. If one thing teeters off, then everything else is trying to compensate, then you're going to have kind of a domino effect happening across the board in your body. So if somebody comes to get their adrenals treated, we usually are looking at thyroid hormones. Like you mentioned, we'll look at their gut, the GI tract, are they having any dysbiosis? And so we treat multiple things, even though it may be that the adrenals are kind of the major thing that's kind of off.
Okay. I'm just gonna have you speak a little bit more on blood sugar, because I think when I remember when I was first learning about blood sugar, I didn't really get it. I didn't really get like how it was stressful on my body to, not eat or eat a bagel or whatever. So tell us a little more about the relationship between blood sugar and the adrenal glands.
Right. So, when people think of stress, I always try to tell them, we could have that fall into four categories. I mean, you could go spiritual, you could talk mental, you could talk emotional, and we talk physical. Now, one of the big places, most people will put that stress in mental and emotional because that's what most people identify it with. And they're not identifying the physical stresses that happen with our body. Now, blood sugar imbalance is a physical stress on our body. So, one of the common things I'll see is people missing meals. People, doing coffee in the morning for their breakfast and not getting a meal until lunch, and then this kind of throws their blood sugars off because what happens is when you have a blood sugar drop or hypoglycemia happening, the adrenals are one of the things that try to kick in to then compensate for that with cortisol, with adrenaline.
Okay.
So, one of the biggest things that we try to get people to do is with macronutrients, so their proteins, their complex carbs, and fats, is to help balance out their blood sugar throughout the day to then take the stress off their adrenals.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And you're right. People just think like, oh, well, I know I'm stressed at work or at my commute or I want a new job. And they, and those things are super important, of course. But sometimes because they're not as familiar with like my adrenal glands and blood sugar and potential parasites, they may not put that high enough on the list to watch out for and care for. So it's definitely something I see. And, I didn't mention the founding practitioner of your clinic wrote a book. Was it called Adrenal Recharge Diet? Is that right?
He wrote the Adrenal Reset
Oh,
Diet.
reset. Thank you. And that covers some of this macronutrient information that you just talked about. Is that
Yes.
correct?
Yeah,
Okay.
it definitely goes in depth about how people can balance out their adrenals, with food.
Okay. Yeah, really interesting. Yeah, we'll direct everybody to your website later where they can check out that book and your profile as well. So we've kind of covered the dysfunctions as we've said, not diseases of adrenals. Can you talk about the diseases?
Sure. So I think earlier we might have mentioned them. So there's Addison's disease and there's Cushing's disease. So the Addison's disease is more of like an exaggerated where adrenal fatigue, you have both increases and decreases in cortisol. This is going to be a hyposecretion of adrenocortical hormones from the adrenal gland. So you'll see cortisol can definitely be lower. You see metabolic disturbances with the sugar balances, electrolytes, like we talked about, the aldosterone then gets affected. So sodium and potassium can get affected. And then you can also see deficiencies of neuromuscular function. And so, quote unquote, these could fall into categories such as the sex hormones and then also kind of just salt balancing. And then Cushing's is your other extreme, and this is where you have hypersecretion of the cortisol hormone. And this usually happens because either the adrenal gland could have a tumor, some kind of hyperplasia of that tissue has happened where it's increased, and you're just starting to produce more cortisol than the body is meant to handle. And those are kind of like your two extremes of what's going to happen. And when you have too much cortisol, I mean, you'll start getting hyperglycemic. So these will start leading to things where it seems like diabetes, and eventually it will become diabetes if you stay in that state for too long. Cortisol also influences your immune system. So when you stay in that for too long, you start becoming more susceptible to infections.
Didn't I don't know if you have an answer to this, but didn't John F. Kennedy have one of these too?
I don't know that off the top of my head.
I'm gonna have to go look it up now. Yeah, I think he had one or the other. I'll have to go look it up now. I'm curious. So how would you distinguish, like, say somebody comes in, maybe you have run this salivary panel, how would you say, oh, this is maybe beyond dysfunction and this could be a disease?
So that's definitely with the blood work can be helpful. If you can do like a morning cortisol through the blood, but the salivary cortisol can also be very helpful for that. So we actually have had some people who come in and then their cortisol is literally elevated all the way across all four sites. And so then we have to do continued workup to then follow up to see if they actually have the Cushing's. Now, this could be with either further lab work. You can also do imaging just to see if there is kind of hyperplasia of the adrenal gland. And then other people also come in and they'll have completely depleted of cortisol across the board. And then we also need to check into other ways to then see if they do have Addison's, if it's primary Addison's, secondary Addison's, or tertiary Addison's, where primary is the gland, the adrenal gland not functioning, and secondary would then be like from the pituitary. The pituitary sends out a hormone signaling the adrenals to make cortisol to see if that's the problem or if it's coming from the hypothalamus, which would be tertiary.
Okay, interesting. So are there autoimmune functions in these diseases, or are these just endocrine diseases?
Yes, no. So if it is in the disease state, it definitely can't have an autoimmune component. So sometimes we also run antibodies against the adrenals to see if that is the reason that the immune system is attacking the adrenals, and that's also causing the dysfunction of the adrenal gland, either from overworking or underworking.
Okay, really interesting. I'm just curious because I've got a case right now, and I'm thinking, is there a total cortisol number that it kind of sends off a alarm to you as being too low, or could it depend on the case?
It could be dependent on the case, and then also, like we've said, it matters the time of day. So, a lower number earlier in the morning would be definitely more of a red flag as opposed to a lower number later on in the day, because you expect those numbers to kind of drop as the day goes on. But normally, what you would want to do is a morning fasting kind of cortisol, where somebody hasn't had a meal since the night before, and they go in and get the blood draw done so that we can see appropriate cortisol levels. You know, when somebody starts to drop below 10, it's something you probably want to look into a little bit more. Again, once you start dropping below 5, it's really a bigger issue.
Below 5, you're definitely alarmed, and below 10, you're checking into it. That
Yes,
kind of sum it
yes.
up. Okay.
And then higher 20s into the 30s would be something you'd be more looking to figure out. Is there a pituitary adenoma? Is it a adrenal adenoma to check out for the Cushing's?
Okay. Interesting. I'm picking your brain on your clinical protocols here. So let's talk about some things that we can do. I mean, we talked about the testing, and obviously if you've got this as any kind of advanced case, you want to work with a practitioner. If you're just listening and you want to get started on some better self-care, what can we do?
So, you know, one of the biggest things I talk about with people is routine for the adrenals. I mean, it makes such a big difference just to have a routine. 'Cause then you know what you're expecting. You're not getting too many curveballs. You're stabilizing your environment as much as you can so that your adrenals don't get stressed out.
Okay.
So one of the first places is what we've already kind of touched on is the diet. So we want to have balanced blood sugar throughout the day. So the first and foremost, the biggest meal of the day is breakfast. We want to have a protein-packed breakfast within 30 minutes to 1 hour of waking.
Okay.
Because this will help stabilize our blood sugar kind of first thing in the morning and sets you up for the day.
All right, perfect. And then how often do you suggest eating, that kind of thing, as the day goes on?
Now, even if you had a big meal, I find it rare that people can usually go longer than 3.5, 4 hours. That's the extent of having a good-sized meal. So meal planning kind of will depend on what somebody's scheduled like. Now, if I have somebody waking up at 6, their first meal happens at 6:37, and then they're telling me that they don't have lunch till 12, they're going to need some kind of snack in between that does provide some sort of protein. This could be a handful of almonds. If there's no dairy issues, you know, Greek yogurt's a great snack to have there. Just to keep their blood sugar elevated enough till they get to lunch. And then again, if their dinner's not till 6 or 7, again, that's too long of a gap, 6 or 7 hours. So they need to have an afternoon snack that will, again, kind of keep them having elevated blood sugar till they're able to make it to dinner.
Okay, great. Yeah, we talked about this on a couple other shows. And I think with paleo, it's kind of the idea of like not having to eat as much, you know, was more traditional, or, you know, having intermittent fasting. But, you know, I would agree that most people are in some kind of adrenal dysfunction, and it, their blood sugar management isn't all that. So to say, well, I'm going to not eat for 8 hours or 6 hours is probably stressful, causing more stress for a lot of people, right?
Right. It definitely is stressful. It causes that hypoglycemia that we're talking about, which then you're depending on. If you got a good night's sleep, then you built some glycogen stores. And so glycogen is branched glucose that our body stores either in the muscles or the liver as reserves, which we only make at night, and then only happens usually when you're having restful sleep.
Okay.
Now you can tap into that for some energy sources. Once those kind of break out, you also are then able to kind of go into gluconeogenesis, which is your liver making glucose from fats and proteins.
Okay. Yeah.
And then you'll start tapping into fat stores or adipose tissue on the body and getting that to turn into glucose. But long terms of fasting, if people are too lean, you know, they don't have the stores, eventually you'll start breaking down your muscle. If you don't have the adipose tissue, and then eventually if you don't have the muscle, you'll start just breaking down vital organs from the tissue.
Well, that's no good.
That's definitely not good.
Okay. Okay. So we talked a little about how often to eat. What else you got for us?
Another thing that, you know, we talked about sleep, you know, restoring your sleep patterns is huge. So there's a lot of sleep hygiene that we talk about with people. They need to get into a routine of trying to go to bed at the same time every day, you know, and honestly, I try to put that time anywhere from probably like 9:30 to 10 p.m. for people. And we want to keep that consistent. And the hardest times actually usually through the weekends when people will, you know, have events, go out, do different things. But we want to try to keep that time as regular as possible, because the body will adapt to that.
Okay. Yeah. You don't have kids right now, right?
I don't have kids, okay. But I do deal with people who have kids, and I understand that they have to wake up, obviously, whether they're nursing, breastfeeding, bottle feeding, or if the kid is just, you know, waking up from not having sleep. So there's always, you know, certain situations where you deal with what's kind of coming. We do what we can to get through that time period, because hopefully that's a finite issue of their child not sleeping through the night.
Yeah, and I was actually mentioning that from another angle, which is I actually think that having kids really helps you get into a regular sleep cycle. You know, when I was single or not, didn't have a kid, you know, you can stay up till 12. Like, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
You know, just sleep in a bit. But if you've got a kid, you know, their rhythms built in, are built in more naturally. And, you know, as a parent, you better get to bed because your kid's going to wake up in the morning and you got to be ready. And then your children need to eat regularly. So I really found that actually to be a benefit of parenthood for me was like, you know, I used to eat a late breakfast or sleep in or stay up late and eat irregularly. And then I found myself, you know, plopping my son down in the high chair every few hours. And I was like, oh, I guess this is, you know, this is how it's supposed to work. It's like, you know, that you have regular meals. And so, yeah, just mentioning that can be a little easier, I think, for parents and for people who are single and all their time is there, so to speak.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I mean, and all we're talking about, again, is like what you mentioned is routine, routine, routine. So if the kid helps to bring that in, hey, that's a pop.
That's what it took for me. Okay, so going to bed 9:30 or 10, do you think there's an important time to get up by, or does that not matter?
You know, if you read the research, you know, most people say you really want to get anywhere from 7 to 9 hours. I know that there's people who will be like, you know, I can do 5 or 6 and get by, but you know, eventually that takes a toll. I think if you look at the bell curve of what research shows for appropriate sleep, it really falls into 7 to 9 hours, which is really going to be either 7.5 to 9 because, you know, your REM cycles are about an hour and a half each.
Okay. Interesting.
And then if, you know, you want to throw exercise in there, recovery from exercise, if you watch elite athletes, they really sleep 7 to 10 hours a night.
Okay. And then, yeah, how much exercise and what kind of exercise do you recommend for adrenal care?
Well, this will matter. If somebody's in a thriving state, you know, they have a little more open access to intensity of exercise. So they can push it a little bit harder because they're in a healthy state. So there's a couple of things we want them to do with exercise. You usually want to work out whenever you have peak energy of the day. So if you feel best in the morning, you're probably going to benefit from doing your exercise in the morning. And there's other people who feel best at night or in the afternoon, and that's the best time if they can to get their exercise in.
Oh, that's really cool. Okay.
There's no, you know, everyone wants to, I've run into so many conversations where people want to tell you, well, morning's the best or night's the best, but it's really case to case and person to person.
Okay.
And then I tell people to find a system that works, you know, if you want to do 3 days a week, well, then let's stick with maybe like a Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So, you know, the days that you need to work out, you get a rest a day in between and then like weekends off for recovery.
Okay. Yeah.
I have other people who like to hit big workouts on the weekends and then, you know, they do like Tuesday, Thursday workouts. And I'll get people that'll do 4 days, 5 days, 6 days a week, sometimes every day of the week.
Mm. Do you tend to work with a lot of athletes?
I get quite a bit of athletes. I also get a lot of lay people who like to push it and like to work out hard.
Okay.
So I have worked with some elite level athletes. I have some athletes that are training for Olympics, and then
wow.
a lot of people that are just trying to work out harder. And there's an intensity issue that does come up where people are overtraining, and I actually have to get them to reduce down their activity level.
Yeah, I think the self-care is so important. I mean, obviously for anybody, but I had a client the other day, we were talking, and she's starting to do her first triathlons. She's about 40. And, you know, I said, you don't really need to think of yourself as an athlete. You know, you're running long runs and doing pretty competitive events. You know, maybe you're not making any money for it. Maybe you're not going to the Olympics, but just the way you treat yourself, the way you get coaching for your sports, the way, you know, you invest in your recovery, I think needs to reflect how hard you're working out.
No, definitely. And that word recovery that you said is huge. It's actually one of the biggest things I find people actually don't have enough of in their routine.
Okay.
Not only whether it be rest days during the week or the rest that they get at night, but, you know, cycling through workouts, like one of the things that we did when we worked with the Division I athletes is they would go through like 4 week cycles where, you know, 3 weeks they were working out hard, and that fourth week, you know, we drop them down to about a third of their activity so that their body could kind of fully recover from all the trauma that happens when you exercise. Like we said, those micro traumas that happen to the skeletal muscle have to get rebuilt. And as you work out hard week after week, you know, those start to maybe build up if we're not giving enough time. So then having an off week where you don't completely give up working out, but reduce the amount of activity, your body is really able to get in there and rebuild everything. And then we'd actually retest them at the end of that week and we'd see their numbers go up.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's a good tip. Any more tips to leave us with for adrenal care?
You know, if you can kind of make those three just starting out, work on your diet, make sure that you're getting appropriate sleep, and then, you know, just mitigating the amount of exercise you do so that you're not over pushing. You know, the one tie-in I would tell you about diet and exercise is, depending on how much you exercise, then your diet may need to increase about quality calories going in to make up for the calories that you're burning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense too. Cool. Well, I didn't mention the name of your clinic when we started, but it's Integrative Health. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
In Scottsdale, Arizona.
Yes.
And yeah, tell us more about if people want to find out more about you or how they can work with you, how they can do that.
Sure. You can check us out at integratedhealthcare.com. We are a clinic. We have about 5 physicians in there, 2 males, 3 females. So depending if gender matters to you, you could work with whoever you want. And clients are able to kind of work with multiple practitioners. It's not like you're kind of set to one person. And we kind of are a specialty more so in the sense that we definitely do a lot of endocrine. Dr. Christensen is definitely known for Hashimoto's, thyroid, and the adrenal book. So we definitely get those two. We also get a lot of hormones as well. And then me personally, I do a lot of sports medicine. I do GI work and the endocrine as well.
Okay, cool. And you were mentioning to me earlier about out-of-state people and how you handle that.
Yeah, so due to the Arizona law, we need to see anybody from out of state at least once in person. And we actually have quite a few of our clients who actually will fly in, do a new patient visit with us. And then for a year, we're able to kind of diagnose and treat them. And so the rest of the time, we're able to kind of do phone call or Skype visits with them to take care of their cares that year until they come back the next year and do a visit with us just to stay active and current with us.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah, really cool. And I was telling you earlier, like, I love that that might be a legal thing, but I think if you make that investment to choose a practitioner who you're attracted to and you travel, you're going to be in it. You know, you've already made the investment. You might as well keep going on your protocol. So I think that's kind of a plus. And having that personal connection at least once, I'm sure is a plus too.
Yeah, no, that's great. The sit down to face to face to get to meet somebody is always different than something over the phone.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time.
No problem, Bridget. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and I want to just thank our listeners, as always, for tuning in. We really appreciate you. We always appreciate you sharing the show. If it's one you're like, oh, I know somebody who needs to listen to this one, just forward it along. If it's your first time listening and you're not subscribed, you can subscribe on your podcast player and you will get a fresh interview with a health expert every week. No charge. So it's a pretty good deal. So
it's a great deal.
And if you have show suggestions, you're welcome to contact me at my website, bridgetdanner.com. You can also rate us and make comments on iTunes about the podcast. We appreciate that very much. Until next week. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.